my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my ears, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone.
Good evening. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I've asked Ryan to come up and tell us our joke.
Alcoholic?
Hey, Ryan.
All right, so this is for the season. Why couldn't the ghost stay sober? Because he couldn't stop getting sheet-faced.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Fred. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or will distract others. Just take this time, let the craziness of the day drift away. Breathe in God, breathe out self, and just help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Let's start the meditation. Prayer, if you don't know, it's on the banner right here. God,
let your light shine like a fog lamp, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love for me. Amen.
From There's a Solution, from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Glenn to read the Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
My name's Glenn, alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource. Which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode or just turn them off. So this is where I introduce Pat. I'm supposed to have a profound introduction, but I don't. But I do know that Pat is, he walks the walk and he does the deal. And I look up to him and I look forward to hearing him every week. Welcome, Pat.
Nice. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat Regan. Thanks to the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And for that, I will be forever grateful. AA didn't just give me my life back, but it gave me one worth living. And I absolutely love my life today. Absolute blast in recovery. Get to do all kind of cool stuff that I never got to do before. Matter of fact, I did one of my bucket list things this weekend. Got to go to Pennsylvania. My drinking career, as Bill says it, which I think he uses that word a couple of times, you know, because it was, right? It wasn't like a part-time job. I mean, my job was like a part-time job. My drinking was a career, you know. And it was hard to fit that job thing in around my career, you know. And at times I would give up my job just to keep my drinking career moving, you know. And I still kind of, it's funny, in recovery, I kind of have the same problem. Like, this job gets in the way of my recovery all the time, you know. I would really just rather do this all the time. I'd really just rather work with newcomers and hang out with you guys at meetings. I mean, because I still chase this thing. I still chase this recovery thing and this fellowship like I did when I first, well, not when I first got here, but, you know, after a few months in here and I got introduced to something called sponsorship, you know, because my first few months here I was unencumbered by that crap, you know, and the steps and sponsorship. But once I got introduced to this fellowship and I felt the power that you guys have, and there is power here. I mean, you know, I think I was guilty early on in my recovery of minimizing the power of the fellowship, and, you know, that, you know, people who don't drink and go to meetings get drunk, and, you know, that whole thing we talk about, like, and that may be true to a point, but, man, I want to tell you something. If it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't be here today. And I'm not just talking about new. I'm talking about the when the crap hit the fan, when I had double digits. You know, it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't be here today. And part of that is the guys that I sponsored just wouldn't leave me alone. You know, thank God. You know, I wanted to run for the door and go hide under the covers somewhere, or go run in the mountains somewhere. And these guys would stop me on my way to the door and say, "Hey, dude, can I talk to you for a few minutes?" Like, "Ah, yeah, okay. You know, what now?" You know, and they'd take my mind off of what was going on at the time. And so I started to say that my drinking career started in Pittsburgh, in Pennsylvania. And one of my bucket list things has been to go to Pennsylvania and carry the message there, or at least tell my story there. You know, I don't know what that's all about. I hope it's not ego, but, you know, I just wanted to go to a meeting in Pennsylvania, you know, and share that, not look at me, I'm sober, but, you know, look, this is where it all started. And anybody that's gone back to their hometown knows that after the meeting, people know where you were. You know, you mention bars, or you mention areas or places, they go, "Dude, I used to get high there too," you know, and you just have this bond again, you know, from the people from your town. And so I got to do that this weekend. I got to go to Pennsylvania, mountains of Pennsylvania, actually, where I grew up as a child. My grandfather had a campsite up there, he had a house and cabin and stuff up there eventually. And so did my father. And then when my career started, that's where I hung out most of the weekends. That's where I went and escaped most of the weekends and did hallucinogenics and stuff like that. And in the woods is really scary. You know? Those freaking deer look like the devil when you're on. I don't know if anybody's ever indulged in any of that stuff, but, you know, you can be lost in your driveway. It's just like a freaky thing, you know. You know, you come down and you go, "Oh shit, I'm home." I was scared to death there for about 4 hours, you know. But that was fun, and yeah, it's good stuff. But, you know, we're talking about the third step, and hey, we're talking about resentments, by the way. I'm going to talk about resentments tonight, and I'm on my way here, and I'm stuck in traffic, and there's this big freaking sign that says road event. The frick is a road event? You know, tell me whether we're shutting lanes down or if we're doing construction. What is a road event? Is that a good thing, a road event? You know, but it does say expect delays. So I don't know if they're partying in the road or if they shut the road down. You know, I'm ready to, like, call City Hall. What is a road? Is that like a nice way to tell you that we're working on the road and you're going to be sitting in traffic? There's an event. You know, I don't know what the hell that is, but. You know, I one of the things I thought of on the way over here is, you know, I shared with you guys last week I struggled at step three. You know, I didn't get it. I was, and like I said, I was unencumbered by sponsorship too. You know, so I was listening, I was sitting in the rooms and just absorbing information that I was hearing, and I just kept hearing this just turn it over stuff and letting it go stuff. And the truth is, I was incapable of letting it go. I was so consumed with my emotions. I was just so consumed with what was going on in my life. And there's probably a few people sitting here right now that they just can't stop the freaking voices. There's just, you know, all this turmoil is going on outside of me that's not in my control. and I've been in control, it seemed, all my life, but that was an imagined control. But, you know, all of a sudden my life is spiraling and everything that I thought was important to me is being torn away, you know, and I don't get it. And I just can't stop those voices trying to figure it out and the emotions that are just putting me into turmoil. I mean, Eric Clapton, and if you ever hear one of his talks, he does a great talk, and he talks about one of the lines that I love, and he says it in that 12 Bars, the special that he does on TV, where he talks about, "I was a tormented soul." My God, do I identify with that. I'm still tormented at times, but I was a tormented soul. And when I came in here, I was in torment. I was tormented. You know, I was driven here. It wasn't my idea, a good idea. I got a good idea. I came here because I didn't know where else to go. My life has fallen apart. Everything, divorce, restraining order, lost custody of my son. It's just insane what was going on in here. So I'm sitting in these rooms, and I'm consumed by that. I'm consumed by that. So when you may have told me some good information, and what I heard was, wah, 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 wah. You know, I heard Charlie Brown's teacher. You know, that's what I heard. Because all I can think about, well, that doesn't apply to me. That doesn't apply. That's not going to help me get my wife back. That's not going to help me get the house back. You know, I mean, that's where I was. And so this turn it over crap, you know. Turn what over, you know? Turn the house over? No. I'll never forget the a guy named Dennis O, and he passed away about a year ago, actually, and one of my mentors. And Dennis would greet you like this. Anybody knew Dennis? He'd greet you like this. "So, hey, tough guy, how's your way working?" You know, and Dennis was literally Dennis was a gangster from Chicago. You know, ex-gangster. I'm sorry. Yeah, you know? and then he'd go on to tell you. He'd say, "So what's up?" You know, and I'd tell Dennis, "Man, you know, she's taking the house, man. I've worked all my life to get that house, and she's taking the freaking house." He goes, "That house really means a lot to you, doesn't it?" And I said, "Oh, man, you have no idea how much that house means to me." And he says, "You're going to lose it." You know, just up stuff. They just bring you up, just pick you up, you know. And I go, "Thanks, Dennis." You know, he says, "Why don't you just give her the house?" And I said, "Are you freaking kidding me? Why would I do that?" "Well, you're going to lose it." You know, and I didn't get what he was trying to tell me. You know, and I saw Dennis like about, I don't know, like 2-3 months later, and Dennis says, "Hey, so what's up with that house?" And I said, "You know what, Dennis? I don't give a shit about that house anymore. You know, I'm just sick of that house. You know, I'm tired of talking about the house." It really was. And he says, "You know what? You're going to keep it." And I don't know why you guys would even, I don't even know why you guys would make a statement like that. I mean, what do you know? You know, I mean, how could you even say that, you know, I'm still in that house today? That was 20, almost 28 years ago. I still have the house, you know. I mean, they're soothsayers, these guys. I don't know how they do that, you know. Like, they can see the future, you know. He just knew that anything you were hanging on to and put in front of God, you were going to lose. He just knew that. Or you were going to get drunk and get it back, you know. You know, one or the other, you know. But he knew once I let it go that, you know what. And it reminds me of, I don't even know if this is where I was going, but this reminds me of a story. A guy used to come up to me all the time, and I don't even remember his name. And I'd share in a meeting. He goes, "Dude, you're the ice cream truck." And I go, "What the? This place is crazy." You know, like, "What do you mean I'm the ice cream truck?" "Yeah, dude, you're the ice cream truck." And so one day I said, "What the F does the ice cream truck? What does that mean? He's driving me crazy." And that's what he wanted to do. He just wanted to rent space in my head, you know, give me something else to think about, right? So I finally tell him, "Okay, let me tell you the story about the ice cream truck," right? And he says, "Joe had an ice cream truck. And every time you asked Cho how he was doing, he would say, 'The truck broke down,' or 'The truck ain't running right,' or 'The freezer's not working properly in the truck.' 'So how you doing today, Chuck?' 'Oh, man, ice cream's melting. Truck's broke.' You know, 'How you doing today, Joe?' 'Oh, the truck broke down the other day. Lost money that day.' You know, and he said, 'Joe became the ice cream truck. You are the house. You have become the house. Don't become the house. don't become the car. And that's third step stuff, right? I mean, that's the stuff that was important to us. That's the stuff that meant everything to me. But I just couldn't get it, man. I didn't get that intangible, man. It was just, I just didn't get it. So I don't really want to be here, right, my first few months that I'm here. I know I need to be here, trust me. I heard the stories, I identified, I get it. I mean, I had nowhere else to go, really. You know, it was either here or my mom's back room, you know, or Danny's. That's where you guys hung out. So I was a little disturbed being here, and I thought, you know what, if God got me here like they said, you know, this is, you know, this keen alcoholic thinking I got going on, right? And I go, I'd be better off at church. That's probably where God really wants me to be. And the truth is, I didn't really want to be here, and that's probably why I wasn't hearing the message here either. This is stupid. You know, I don't want to share. I just, you know, I don't want hugged. This is like a cult. You know, you can't brag about this, but if I go to church, I could tell people I'm a member of St. Andrew's Church, right? So I don't, you know, we don't do nothing half-ass. We're either all in, all out. You know, that's our thing, right? We don't do half-half, you know. We don't know moderation, right? We just don't. So I decide church it is, right? And I didn't stop coming to meetings, but I kind of scaled back a little bit. I wasn't doing my 270 and 90 anymore. You know, I went, like, cut it back to, like, 90 and 90, you know. But I'm doing church. Right, and look, this is not church bashing. I've since turned back to my religion, so you know I'm not bashing church. I'm just saying sharing my experience with you. Right, so I go there. I become a Eucharistic minister. I become an usher. I get involved in the RCIA classes. So I'm doing it all. I'm doing the deal. Right, I'm in. Right. So we're up at the altar. They changed this thing up on the altar. I'm Catholic. I was raised Catholic, and I went back to Catholic Church. And they changed the thing where they used to just, you know, give the Eucharist out on the altar. Well, they started passing the wine, right? So the wine starts going around. I'm freaking, right? like I'm on the altar going, shit. I don't wanna... you know, I'm watching this thing, this chalice come around. I'm going, holy crap, what do I do, you know? And, you know, we are third step stuff. I want to be part of, but I don't want to be drunk, you know. And so it gets to me, and I hold it like dynamite, you know. Like I go, like it's nitroglycerin or something, you know. And the guy beside me takes it, and he hands it back. And he goes, he says, no, that's the blood of Christ. You can drink it. I said, that's friggin' wine, man, you know. And he could be right. He could be right. I don't know. All I know is it tastes a lot like wine. That's all I know. It smelled like wine. I wasn't going to check it out. They did not get that. They did not get that. You know, I got a lot of flack after that, you know. And so, but there was other issues. You know, we have philosophical debates galore, you know what I mean? I'm in RCIA, and I started hearing this stuff about, you know, there's only one way, and only you're only going to get going to heaven one way and one direction. And I'm going, excuse me, you know, I mean, I start questioning, you know, like, you're telling me, like, the Jews aren't going to heaven? Is that what you just said? You know, I'm just disrupting the class, right? Like, they want me out. They want to kick me out, right? They're like, maybe you shouldn't do this, you know. And I thought, you know what, maybe you're right. You know, maybe I need to go back to my people. My people understood me when I said I couldn't drink that wine. They got it. You know, they don't get it. They don't get it because they're normies, right? They don't get it. And there's a lot of people in recovery there now. I know that now. But, you know, that wasn't the crowd that I was involved in. But so part of my problem here was that I wasn't in. I wasn't chasing it. I just wasn't, you know, the third step, it escaped me because I wasn't there. Once I got a sponsor, and once somebody sat down with me, and my sponsor, look, I'm a Charlie Parmalee clone. I mean, that Charlie Parmalee was my mentor and my idol in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the guy who's Brian H., who sponsored me, who was my first sponsor, had just left a Joe and Charlie Big Book seminar. So he was like going to practice it on me. You know, that's kind of what happened. To see if it really worked. And so he sat down with me and explained this third step the way I talked about it last week. You know, that what was killing me was my desire for more. You know, that I needed more recognition and I needed more material and I needed more relational than any man on the planet deserves. And it's in the pursuit of that satisfaction of those instincts. It's in pursuit of sex and cars and houses and attention. And in that pursuit of that, I have put myself in conflict with the world. You know, and what we talk about later, we talk about three dimensions. You know, like if I'm in conflict with you, I'm in conflict internally, which blocks me from God and puts me in conflict with God. I mean, we'll get that formula later on, but that's the deal. And I think it's the world against me, and it's me dictating negativity from the world, right? I'm a taker. And that's what that whole conversation in the third step is about. The first requirement is being convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. And then it goes on to explain what that looks like. And they call me self-will run riot. No, they didn't say that. They said, you're an extreme example of self-will run riot. You're not just self-will run riot. You're an extreme example of self-will run riot. Because I'm a pleasure seeker. That's just what it is. I'm a pleasure seeker. I need something to make me feel good because I'm the freaking ice cream truck. You know, I'm the 62 Bel Air. That's what I was. And then when you rip the fender off the 62 Bel Air because you were doing Quaaludes, you're no good anymore. You're a piece of shit now, you know, because look at your fender. Nobody's going to like, no girl's going to get in a car with a fender torn off, you know. And so I'm the ice cream truck, you know, I'm the Bel Air now, and I'm just shattered. My world is shattered. And that was just the story of my life. You know, now I need a better car and a bigger car. I'm just chasing. I am what I own. I am what I own. And what's even worse is that I'm not validated unless I have her in my life. I am alone. It's all about her. And I'm not talking about anybody in particular. It's just all about her. You know, and if she'll sleep with me, I'll marry her. That's just the deal, you know. And then somehow I got to keep her from leaving the house, you know, because she'll find somebody else if I let her leave the house. So I got to find a way to keep the doors locked. I got to find a way to do that, because if she leaves, I'm shattered. And that was my whole life. I mean, I swear, I was suicidal when a girl broke up with me. I have two sons. They just let that shit go, right? I mean, I'd kind of console them when their girlfriend when they would break up. I go, dude, man, you going to be all right, dude? You know, I know how that is. He goes, yeah, I'm okay. Yeah. Like they weren't suicidal after the breakup. Like, I wanted to end, I'll fix the bitch. I'll kill myself. You know what I mean? Right? That's me. That's who I am. That's who I am. And just drink myself to where I can give myself permission to off myself. That's really what it is, you know. I need permission. So give me some more of that damn Canadian whiskey, man. You know, give me some of that shit. That's what's killing me. Thank God Bill was just like me, just like us. He was tormented also. And you see that in his writing. He was tormented in that third step. Self-will run riot, right? What's killing me is that I'm self-centered. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity, and I step on the toes of everybody because I'm taking from everybody, and they retaliate, and I'm in conflict with everybody. I'm in conflict constantly. And even in my relationships, I'm such a smotherer. It's just, you know, I just smother them. You know, there's no freedom. Why were you talking to him? It's my brother. Oh. Yeah. Just that kind of thing. I mean, it's just, God, thank God Facebook wasn't around back then. Holy crap. You know what I mean? Jesus. I said I loved you this morning. She didn't answer. What the fuck? You know, jeez, I know she's on the green lights there, you know, and she commented on this comment over here. I wonder if she's seeing him. I wonder. It's been 3 hours. I said I love you this morning. Said I love you on Facebook. No answer. You know, just the insanity that went through my head. And at times, we'll still do that if I don't reel myself in. You know, the Apostle Paul said it perfectly. One of my favorite lines in the bigger book, you know, where he talks about, and this is third step stuff, capture every thought. and bring it into obedience. Somehow I got to capture my thinking and stop it. You know, like stop. Capture this for a moment. Has it just pause for a minute? Because, you know, we talked about in the third step that our thoughts turn to actions. Actions equals our life. Not true with me. My thoughts turn to emotions, dictated by what you just said or what you just did. And then it turns to an action, which usually is not pretty. You know, it's really not pretty. It's selfish. It's self-centered. And it's driven by fear. I mean, Bill knew us. I mean, the writer knew us so well, right? And it just, and then he goes on to say, and my, the next slide I love, but we usually don't think so. Right? We're here, nobody likes us, but I'm not selfish, I'm a giver, you know? That's what's killing us. It has the power to actually kill. Why? Because for me to be in conflict, I drink. I drink over conflict. That's just the deal. I'm an emotional cripple when it comes to conflict. Still to this day, I don't do conflict well. That's thank God for 4 through 9. I mean, thank God when I get into that mode, I got a way out. And sometimes it means I have to apologize and take the high road and just admit something I didn't even do. I just want out. I just want out. I just want to, all right, you're not going to pay me? Okay. You know, I'm not saying it's that simple, right? It might be 8, 16, 24 hours in between there, right? Where I plot blowing up their mailbox or, you know, something like that. But eventually, I know that that uncomfortability is going to lead me to a drink. And I got to eliminate it. I got to get it out of my life, right? And there seems no way possible for me to do that on my own. You know, we must have God's help. What did you guys figure out? There's 82 of them in the fourth edition. Started out with 100 and some in the first. The Crunch Monkeys researched the must. And there was 100 and something in the first edition. In each edition, it got less, probably because of the stories being changed. But 82, I think they said. Is that what it was? Do you remember? 78. Okay. In the fourth edition. We must find him now. You know, there's no way of me getting rid of it. And I stopped short last week at the third step. And this is the third step. It's not the prayer. The third step is at the bottom of page 62. It says, this isn't the how and why of it. Remember, at the beginning, it says a requirement. The first requirement that any life run on self-will can't be a success puts us in conflict. Well, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. That's what we've been doing. We've been trying to control everything and everybody. We were the actor trying to be the director. We were the actor trying to run the show. And we knew that if you did what we wanted and did it the way we wanted it, everybody would be happy, including you. Trust me on this, right? If you just do it the way I want to do it, you just do what I say, not only am I going to be happy, but you're going to be happy. Right? The problem is they have a will too, and they're going, that ain't the way it works, right? First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided hereafter in the drama of life, God was going to be our director, not our suggester, our director. He's the principal, we are his agents, he is the father, we are his children. And most good ideas are simple on this concept, a new and triumphant arch through which we pass the freedom. We'll build this structure that we're going to pass the freedom. He talks, you know, Bill likes to talk in parables. He talks about willingness being the foundation, belief in the second step, or willingness to believe in the second step being the cornerstones. And this keystone, this position that we're going to take, where we start capturing the thought and bring it into obedience, that is going to be the keystone of the rest of our recovery. That willingness to do that, that willingness to stop for a minute, that willingness to change the way we think, or at least look at the consequences of our thinking and our actions. And then it goes on to give us these third set promises that if we took that position, these remarkable things happen. We had a new employer. There's conditions. We have a new employer. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and did his will, did his work well. There's conditions here. The third step really is terms of surrender. If we do this, he'll do that. If we do this, he'll do that. If we do this, it will do that. She will do that. Whatever your conception is, you know. However limited that is, what's your conception? By the way, not your creation, your conception. We don't get to create God. We can choose our own conception, however inadequate anybody else thinks that is. You know, he, she, it, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, call it whatever you want. Just know that it can't be a human power. Because if nothing, if I'm not convinced of anything in my recovery, it's that there is no human power on this planet that will keep me from picking up a drink. And I only know that because I took some steps and I got some results. I was just willing to believe that up front. I shared with you when I first got here, or second week or something, I was the practicing agnostic when I got here. You know, yeah, there's something out there, but you know, it ain't what you say it is. You know, it ain't something up there punishing me and saying you're good, so you're going to be fine. I don't go for that. You know, I'm not buying that. I'm not buying the white bearded guy in the sky. It's just not me. You know, but I can choose a conception that I'm okay with, and that conception is somebody that's very loving and forgiving. You know, there's nothing I can do to stop God from loving me. Nothing. 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 I can move out of his grace or its grace, but there's nothing I can do to stop that being from loving me. It's pure love. You know, the ultimate love. I didn't get those promises, being as I was there and incapable of letting go of a lot of stuff in my life, weren't even attainable for me. And even if you got them, they're not sustainable without more action. You know, that's the warning right there. You know, that though these promises might materialize in your life, this idea of feeling this new power flow in and this peace of mind and, you know, this discovering that we could face life, you know, that all those promises may be true and they may materialize in your life here because informationally we got some good knowledge. I couldn't disagree with that statement that I'm self-centered and I'm driven by fear and I'm a taker. I couldn't dispute that. And just knowing that kind of changes my position, just kind of changes my frame of mind. But it's unsustainable unless it's followed by more action. You know? The third step prayer sounds like terms of surrender. Hey, how about you guys? You want to do the third step prayer? Right? God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Validating the new position, validating the third step. The third step is he's the principal, I am the agent, he is the father, I am the child. He is the director, I am the actor. And we validate that with a prayer. But doesn't it sound like terms of surrender? I offer myself to you. Oh, yeah, you can build with me and do what you want, right? Relieve me of the bondage of self. Oh, yeah, I'll do your will. Right? Take away my difficulties so that I can bear witness to the power. Terms. Right? I do this, I'll get results. This is all about action and results. This whole book is about action and results. We call them promises. You know, they're results of action taken. Yeah. But then it warns us that there'll be little permanent effect at least at once. It's the words are next and at once. Not next week, next month, next year. It's next, which means now and at once, followed by a strenuous effort to be rid of the things that are blocking me from God. I have to, I'm blocked. I'm consumed. I didn't get the promises because I'm still the freaking house. I'm still her. Without that validation, I'm nothing. Without the right car, she took the SUV. Without that SUV, I'm shit. What am I going to drive now? Yeah. How do I do that? You know, the second step, one of my favorite writings from Bill, in where he tells us where we're going to find God, because I was going to St. Andrews, St. Elizabeth's, Calvary. I was going to San Isidro. You know, I was all over chasing God. And not only does Bill give us the formula to find him, right? Willingness, decision, action, results, right? But he tells us where we're going to find him, and that's deep down within every one of us is the fundamental idea of God. Blocked by the argument in my head, yeah. Calamity, pomp, ego,
Right? Ego, I don't need that. I got this. Right? Nobody, so I don't surrender. I'll tell you, if somebody would have said, is anybody ready to surrender? I wouldn't have picked up that white chip. Somebody asked me if I wanted to start a new way of life. I jumped up out of my chair. But I wasn't ready to surrender. That meant give up. I didn't know that was a requirement, by the way, but later I realized. Right? And the worship of other things, the car, the house, her, the money, blocked. But deep down with every one of us is the fundamental idea of God. And it's that, in the last analysis, that's where it will be found. Right? And I think we all know that. I think, you know, when that was put to me that way, it's like, stop looking. What a place to hide God from an alcoholic. Inside every one of us, deep down within. And I think I've always known that. Call it conscience. Call it common sense. Call it knowing right from wrong. A good friend of mine, a guy that I chased and I still chase because he's still doing series around, Ben T. And Ben T called it the soul. The part of you that knows that it knows that it knows. Right? No matter what I'm saying to you, no matter what facade you see up here, and no matter how great I say I'm doing, there's a part of me that knows that it knows that it knows. Right? How you doing? Fine. That's the classic right there. I was detoxing and I was fine. Hanging in there. That's my favorite. What's scary is when you hear somebody with multiple years say hanging in there. Because that is not what this is about. This is not about hanging in there one effing moment at a time. It's not. We live our life one day at a time. We live one day at a time. We still plan. Most of us have insurance policies. You know, we plan. We still plan. If you got a job interview coming up, you better plan. You know, emotionally, we stay in the now. Now it's about removing. Now it's about peeling the onion. Now it's about removing the things that are blocking me from the God within. My behavior doesn't warrant a relationship with God. It won't allow it. I'm full of guilt. I'm full of anger. Full of fear. Shame. All these things that are blocking me. You know, we came in here with everything we need. There was nothing we lacked. What we needed to do now was to remove the things that are blocking us from the sunlight of the Spirit. And that's what Bill's talking about in the fourth step. This is not some scary stuff. It's not a list of dirty, nasty things. If it was, Bill would have said amoral or immoral. He's an English literature major. He said moral. Moral means truth. This is an effort to find the truth about ourselves. He uses the business inventory in the big book to kind of validate that. You know, fact-finding, fact-facing, searching, fearless. Yeah. Find the truth about ourselves. Moral. It's not the things I'm doing, you know, it's not the dirty, nasty things. It's where is my behavior blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit? Where is the conflict in my life blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit? He talks about a spiritual sickness, right? That manifesting itself, that selfish and self-centered people suffer from a spiritual sickness. Manifesting itself, and he uses resentment, fear, and guilt, remorse, and shame. You know, incorrect thinking, incorrect feelings, and incorrect actions, you know, have put us in conflict in those areas. Those are the core defects he kind of talks about, that we have to do some of those things or it will kill us. The resentment's the number one offender. Will kill us. Makes sense, right? I mean, if we have a mental issue, we go to a psychologist, therapy, or some medication. We have a physical illness, we go to a doctor, either fixes the problem or medicates to get rid of it. We have a spiritual sickness. There's only a spiritual solution. There is no chemical solution to a spiritual sickness. I love that line, remember, about alcoholism. Someday, science may someday accomplish this, but they haven't done so yet. Yeah. They have no clue who they're dealing with here. Right? We've heard recently, like in the last couple of years, they got a pills and stuff and medication that's, you know, going to cause us or allow us to drink normally or, you know, or not suffer the physical craving once we pick up a drink. You know, they got no clue who we are, right? Because if they had a pill that would allow me to drink normally and it made me feel good, what would two pills do? That's the first thing goes through my head, right? And if two would make me feel twice as good, three, God help us, three would be perfect. And I'd overshoot the mark again, right? How many of us would be crushing it? Better delivery system, right? Cooking it? Anybody cooking it? Yeah. Yeah. They have no clue who they're dealing with here. Yeah. And you know what the truth is? And maybe we'll talk about this later. You know what the truth is? If they had a pill that would allow me to drink normally, if it really would happen, if they really had a pill that would allow me to drink normally, I would not give up what I have today for it. I would not. Now, maybe at 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, I would have a hard time with that, right? But where I'm at today, there's no way I'd trade what I have today to be able to drink normally. Screw that. I found something here, and look, can't show it to you. Can't show it to you. I hope it shows up, and when you look into my eyes, I hope it shows up. When you watch where I walk, I hope it shows up there. It's an intangible. You know, it's something that when... And I'm going to say something that I hated when I got here. It's a life beyond my wildest dreams, right? That's like the newcomer going, oh, shit. You know, doesn't he know where he is? He's in AA. You know, he's a drunk. True, though. I remember hearing that from a guy from the podium. I said, you don't even have a car, dude. You know, life beyond your wildest dreams. How can you have a life beyond your wildest dream without a car and a girlfriend? You know, I know what he was talking about. He was talking about something intangible. He was talking about something he couldn't even show me. You know, we can't show somebody that. Can't show somebody a feeling. It's a freedom. You know what? I like my truck, and I like my motorcycle, and I like my house. But you know what? If I lost them, I'd be fine. I would be fine. Not a big deal to me. You know, I'm not validated by those things anymore. I am not the house. I am not the truck. I am not the Highlander. You know, I am not the motorcycle. That is not who I am right now. You know, there's just more important things in my life. You know what? I've gotten to a point in my life now where less is more. You know, I really want to cut back on the things and enjoy life more, enjoy the intangibles. You know, I'd really like to quit my job and just do this. But that ain't happening. This is where I enjoy myself the most here with you guys. I just do. I love it. And that sounds cultish. And it sounds, you know, for a newcomer going, dude, like, that's no life. You know, you have no idea what I enjoy in my life. You have no idea how I've transformed spiritually in my life. I mean, I love my life. When I say that, I mean that. I hope you feel that. I love my life. Love it. And I'm not dominated by all these things and, you know, I've been through it. I've been through the health issues and the relationship issues, and I've lost things. I've had bankruptcy. I mean, it's happened. And you know what? I didn't drink. I came to you guys, and we freaking laugh sometimes. You know, it's tragic, but it's funny to us. I don't know why. I mean, I don't get that sometimes, right? We sit around and tell these tragically funny stories, you know. It's kind of an identification thing, and we laugh about the car accident, and the, you know, and people beside us are going, well, you hear these people over there? Where the hell was I? Bill says resentment's number one offender, and for sure. For me, it's fear, because my resentments are fear-based. You know, I think, you know, he goes on, he says resentment's the number one offender, and then he goes on to say fear is the underlying corroding thread behind it all, you know, and it's really, I'm angry because I'm afraid, and I don't want to show the fear, so the fear comes out in anger. You know, that's what I do. I get my chest bowed up when you scare me or you threaten me. You know, I don't know any other way. You know, my ex used to say, you don't know how to have a discussion. It's always a confrontation. No, it isn't. But that's how I discussed. I got loud and I walked towards you, you know. That's my way of discussing. They call that a confrontation. Psychologists call it a confrontation. That's what I was told by the shrink. You're confrontational. No, I'm not. Jesus, you don't know shit. We need to get somebody else here. That funny story, I actually went to marriage counseling. for my before I got divorced the first time. And by the way, I'm married three times. It wasn't them. You know, if you're married three times, it ain't them. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're mad at everybody, it ain't them. You know what I mean? That's just the deal, right? If you've got four DUIs, it ain't them. You know, you're not unlucky. It's not just bad breaks and misunderstandings. You know what I mean? It's the real deal. But, you know, we went to marriage counseling with a psychologist. I had her convinced that it was her, right? I'm the alcoholic addict. I'm drunk all the time. And I have the psychologist calling me during the day going, I don't know what we're going to do with her. And I go, I don't know either. You know? We're the best at that kind of stuff. We can manipulate, man. Anyway, resentment number one offender. It kills more alcoholics than anybody. But here's what I love about that paragraph. And it's funny, when I'm talking, I'm such a big book guy. I really am. I come from the big book. That's my main source of information. I like the 12 and 12. Love the big book. You know, the big book expands knowledge of the book. I mean, the 12 and 12 expands the big book, but it's not the program of recovery. And when I'm talking up here, I see the book. You know what I mean? Like, I see the pages, you know, and so I come from there because it's because that's it. That's the answer. But he talks about unless, and this is where it spoke to me, unless, I'm gonna put this into one single person, right? Unless I overcome this spiritual disease, then I will never recover physically and mentally. Unless I overcome that. And by the way, that's the only time you're ever going to see the word disease in this book. AA doesn't care about that. When they talk about disease, they're talking about a spiritual disease. They don't see that word anywhere else. We don't have an opinion on it. You know, even after, 1953, I think it was, that the AMA adopted it as a disease. I could be wrong. If somebody knows the exact date and I'm wrong on that, let me know. I think it's 1953. The big book didn't care. They didn't change anything. Yeah, they didn't care that they adopted it as a deal. We don't care. We don't get into that debate. Who cares? We're about the solution. We don't care why you have the problem. You got it, right? Or you wouldn't be here. And if you had another way out, you'd be there. You know, that's a shout out to the believers, right? If your faith, what's it say twice in the book? If a better code of morals or better philosophy on life was sufficient, none of us would be here. We'd be there. That's how we know your way didn't work, because you're here. It's like simple. Well, how do you know my way didn't work? You're here. You wouldn't be here if that worked. I wouldn't, right? If church was sufficient, I'd be there. My mom doesn't brag about this, right? She don't tell all her friends I'm in AA. She can't. I told her one time I got to speak at the CA International Convention, and when it was in Fort Lauderdale, I mean, what a privilege. I told my mom, man, I'm speaking at the International CA Convention. She goes, I can't tell nobody that. She said they'd grab their purses if I said that, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't say cocaine. It's okay to be an AA, kind of, but not cocaine at all. You can't be a CA. No, son, don't go. All the information that I've gotten up until this point about the physical and mental aspects of the illness, and that's what Bill calls it, an illness or a sickness, right? All the information we got here is great. It's educated me. I know now about the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body. I know now why I can't stay stopped and why I can't control it once I start drinking. But if I don't do something about the way I feel, I can't do it. I can't. I know that. And if that was sufficient, if that knowledge was, and if it is sufficient, you're not one of us. I mean, there's no reason to be here, you know, unless you're dating somebody here or something, drinking our coffee. But there's, you know, if you can, and our book goes, look, there's not a lot of ideas in this book. They're just repeated over and over again, right? And if you can stay sober on a non-spiritual basis, you're not one of us. It's that clear, right? If you can do this another way, go for it. You know, but all that information, if all I needed was the doctor's opinion, I wouldn't be here. I would say, dude, just don't drink. I got it. I'm done. That's it. I get. Hey. And actually, I called my ex-wife before she was my ex-wife when I got in here after she had me arrested. And like I said, I didn't just come here because I thought it was a good idea. But I called her and I said, look, I found out. I'm an alcoholic. I just can't drink. And she said, yeah. And you're an asshole. And she hung up. She was right. She was right. She was right. Yeah. Because she knew why I was calling. I just wanted my shit back. She knew. You want back in the house, don't you? Oh, no, no. You want your truck back, don't you? No, no. Of course I did. Yeah. I can't stay stopped because of the way I feel. Like I said, I'm an emotional cripple. And I don't know where that comes from. I don't know. I really don't. I don't know if I was just born that way. I mean, look, I caught the genetic bullet when it came to alcoholism. I was an alcoholic from the start. You just needed to add alcohol. I think that's the deal with me. I don't know anything about controlled drinking, and I've never controlled drink. I don't know why you would want to control drink. The whole point of the exercise is to drink to excess. That was just the whole thing, you know. Change the way you feel. That was the exercise. And unless I do something about that, because even when I had severe consequences to suffer, I could make it like 3 days, you know, and then I'd start secretly drinking. And you know what happens to alcoholics who secretly drink? They come home drunk. And then they say they weren't drinking, but they're staggering around, you know. Then I found something down in Florida when I moved here that could allow you to be a functional drunk. That was interesting. About $300 a pop. But you could drink all night and go to work. That was, you know, and you could show up at home and really be like kind of coherent. Just talked a lot, you know, and fast. I can't stay stopped. I get to this point where I just can't feel like this for one more effing second. And if that's your experience, you're one of us. I just can't do this. And man, I would try to... I would go other directions to try to satisfy that feeling, whether it be spending or, you know, trying to look for the next ex or, you know. And I mean, I remember coming into rooms, I was like sitting on the back wall, you know, the wall of shame, you know, relapse row back there, you know, and I'd be looking at the back of the head of my next wife, you know, like she'll fix me. I'll fix that bitch. I'll get somebody, you know, I'll get somebody else, you know, that... I'm sorry, that's just where I was. Thank God I had sick just imprinted on my forehead. Or the one that I'm attracted to would usually share, and I go, oh my God, Jesus, you know. She drank freaking cough medicine last night, Jesus. You know, not going there. I offered to buy her a bottle. Come on, it took a while to get us together. I'm fighting myself. I'm fighting my emotions. I emosh. I just do. I over-emosh. That's just me. That's just who I am. I feel too much, but then I tell you I don't care. You know, that's it. Does that hurt your feelings? No. Is there anything I can do? No. I don't care. It's a tough way to live, man. It's a tough deal. You have to medicate. You got to medicate. That's, Bill's talking about a spiritual issue here. And if we don't overcome that, and that's what the rest of this book is about, something's got to change up here, man, because there's nothing I can do about the physical. You know, I got to change spiritually somehow. The conversation has shifted a couple times, right? It's gone mental, physical, and then the third step is going behavioral. It's talking about my behavior is the issue. And now it's switched again. It's talking spiritual. It's talking internal. The internal is driving my behavior. You know, my dishonesty, my anger, my selfishness is driving the behavior. My selfishness is coming from that. My need to medicate in every area of my life, my need for more is being driven by my spiritual condition, by my internal condition. I remember not really getting that until I heard Mark H. Do a talk one time, and he called it an internal condition. And then I got it. It clicked. Bill called it a spiritual malady, right? And from this stems all sorts of these, you know, spiritual disease. But Mark talked about an internal condition. And when he talked about that, it nailed it. Yes, there's something internal going on. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's because daddy beat mommy or, you know, I didn't get what I wanted when I was little. I don't know. You know, I just know that there was this impending doom from day one. We were just talking before the meeting about fear, you know, fear of speaking. I don't know how I get up here and do this. I really don't. This is God's grace. There's no other explanation, because I was a 5-year-old that would take an F rather than share his homework in front of the class. That was just who I was. I was scared to death that I wouldn't read it properly or something would take place that people would make fun of me and then I would just have to kill myself. You know, just I wouldn't be able to live with that, you know. And so rather than fail, I'll do nothing. And that was my thing. I skipped school in third grade. What third grader has a reason to skip school, right? I was just scared. I just didn't want to be there. I was small. I was shorter than I didn't want to go. You know, I was the kid to make fun of and pick on. You know, I was just that kid. So, that's not an excuse for being an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because I can't stay stopped. I can't control it. People have way worse lives than me. They have a couple drinks. They get relaxed and they forget it. You know, that's just the deal. There are people who have been sexually abused and physically abused in their life. I wasn't that guy. You know, so they have way better reasons to drink, and they're able to safely drink and moderate, right? So we're out of time. I'm running late. We'll get back to this till next week. Thanks.
Thanks, Pat. Let's thank the speaker one more time. And here's Ryan for your secretary's report.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary.
Hey, Ryan.
In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Katie to read the recovery statement. Katie's visiting us from Vegas.
Yeah, Katie.
We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Katie, alcoholic?
Hey, Katie.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The alcoholic reaction to alcohol, or the allergic reaction to alcohol, will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
A 1940s-style Big Book sponsorship from the forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and stayed that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above show a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Awesome. And is there anybody here that needs a sponsor? If you could just raise your hand. Yeah, back in the back. Can you guys stand up real quick? So if anybody wants to see these guys after the meeting, we can help get them connected back to God. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study meeting where the book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. And we have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, and little red books and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back. And we have some announcements. The Broward County Intergroup, there's office hours, information on how to get in touch with them. You can get medallions, you can get literature. And then next we have... volunteer opportunities. If you're looking for ways to chop wood or carry water, there's plenty right here. AA's Got Talent. It's like America's Got Talent, but with drunk people. So that should be pretty cool. It's coming up in February. We got the gratitude dinner planning. That's coming up on November 2nd. The event's coming up on November 2nd. This year it's going to be the best is yet to come. So that sounds promising. The 43rd annual Broward County Intergroup Picnic is on Sunday, November 4th. There's going to be like live music, food, games, sports, face painting. I don't know about you guys, but they had me at face painting. And then we've got 5th annual Gratitude Days, November 9th through November 11th. So there's a lot going on in November, so a lot to look forward to. And we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. And we ask that you be ready to begin, courteous and ready to begin, at the sound of the bells. And then also, just a quick reminder, there's a 75-foot no-smoking vape zone in front of the doors. So when you leave here tonight, don't light up or vape until you're 75 feet from the doors. So the Boy Scouts are here, so if they're not allowed to do it, neither are we. Thanks for your cooperation.
We have tonight's session and all past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. And those who wish to thank the speaker, just please line up down the center aisle. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you smiling, when you smiling, the whole world smiles with you within the world. Yes, when you laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted. See the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way. Flowers blooming all the time outside my door. Never before I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. This broken man had traveled far and wide, drew the great divide through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away and it's just about to start. So I face each day brand new way, show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms, and here in this moment that we share, nothing could come in. The light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's alright. Oh man, going on 10 years old, that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.